Today we're going to be looking at the Sermon on the Mount, which is found in chapter 5 of the book of Matthew. We will begin in chapter 4 in a moment, so please turn there. Matthew chapter 4, towards the end of the chapter. The first four chapters of Matthew's Gospel give an easy-to-follow narrative leading up to the Sermon on the Mount, as it is most commonly known. He threads his narrative through the birth of Jesus, John the Baptist's role, the baptism of Jesus, and the temptation of Jesus in the desert. And just before chapter 5, Jesus begins his ministry and calls the first disciples. So let's start reading in Matthew chapter 4, verse 23. Jesus was going through all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every kind of disease and every kind of sickness among the people. The news about him spread throughout all Syria, and they brought to him all who were ill, those suffering with various diseases and pains, demoniacs, epileptics, paralytics, and he healed them. Large crowds followed him from Galilee and the Decapolis and Jerusalem and Judea and from beyond the Jordan. So we can see here in his short ministry so far that Jesus is gaining popularity and the people are responding to him. He's healing diseases. The crowds are descending on him, and it's time to give them more than just the physical medicine and healing that he's been giving so far. It's time to really change their lives. And subsequently, he's going to change the lives of many, many people in the future who will hear this. And like the sermon that I'm giving you today, based on these, which we would have seen on the lesson, Lessons from the Mount is the name of this. And I'm pulling all these lessons from the Sermon on the Mount that he's about to give them on this mountain after he's just done this. So the sermon Jesus gave on the mountain is divided into three main sections. It starts in chapter 5 with the Beatitudes and discipleship. That's 5, 1 through 16. Then he goes into the fulfillment of the law and ethical teachings. That closes out chapter 5. And then chapter 6 and 7 are religious practices and life in the kingdom. So my sermon today is not going to be an exhaustive overview of Christ's sermon. I plan to pull one main lesson from each of these sections. So if you haven't read this in a while, the Sermon on the Mount is highly recommended. I've read a lot of the Bible, but as I get older, you find different things that kind of affect you differently as you read them. So I do recommend taking the time to get re-familiar with the entire work. So in the first section of chapter 5, we're going to look for a lesson here. Jesus began teaching with a list called the Beatitudes. And this is a to-do list type of thing. Kind of to-do list people really appreciate this approach. It gets right through it. So let's read these quickly. And that's Matthew chapter 5, verse 3. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the gentle, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. And then in verse 10, he kind of goes back to the kingdom of heaven idea, and he says, blessed are those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Jesus is using the term blessed to mean someone who has favor in God's eyes and is living in his will. He wants us to be peacemakers. He wants us to be gentle and pure in heart. These things don't always come naturally to us. But if we look at the rewards from these actions, being comforted, being satisfied, seeing God, and living in his kingdom, the kingdom of heaven, these are huge rewards. These rewards can help us today. They'll help us throughout our life, through our walk, our Christian walk. And they are eternal. And we will be, verse 9, sons of God. So, our first lesson in the Lessons on the Mount that I've pulled out of them anyway, is to be the blessed. These opening teachings in his sermon demonstrate to us our complete dependence on him for all of these things. He contrasts the difference between what we have in the world and what we could have if we were to live as blessed people. In verse 12, he closes out the section on the Beatitudes with the following. That's verse 12. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great. How often do we need to hear those words, rejoice and be glad? Just saying those words makes you feel a little something, especially after a week we've had with disaster relief and seeing people's homes wiped away and dear brother Randall passing away. It can affect you, and so rejoice and be glad really makes you feel something. We will mourn when we see loved ones pass before us in this life. There will be times when we need to be gentle, and we need to show strength, but that strength should be under control. And we should also hunger and thirst for righteousness. But living in this society is not always easy, and it is ready to make us unrighteous. Times of persecution may be before us. We will run into conflict, and we need to be a peacekeeper. So that goes on and on. So rejoice and be glad. Jesus knew that his times were coming when he was teaching to them on the hill. Yet he had just resisted the devil in the wilderness, and he tells them that. He says that to them, rejoice and be glad, knowing what was before him. If we manage to get these actions in line with God's will, what does Jesus say will naturally happen? Look at verse 13 and 14. We will be the salt of the earth and city set on hills. Salt and light, two timeless examples that no matter the culture, No matter the culture, we will be able to understand and relate to those two ideas. So the first lesson from the first section of the Sermon on the Mount is to be the blessed. Be the person that Jesus is talking about here. Experience these blessings and live according to God's will. So the second section, the end of chapter 15, he briefly mentions that he came to fulfill the law, and then he provides some teaching about going deeper in life. You may remember these verses as we kind of go over here. He covers six important laws from the Old Testament, and he expounds on them. And these are anger, adultery, divorce, vows, retaliation, and loving our enemies. Now, these aren't very common. We don't have to worry about these, do we? We don't ever have problems with any of that list. For each of these sections, he starts with, you have heard it was said, and then he gives them something to work on. He says, but I say to you, so forth. So what can we draw from these, this section, about actually doing that? Well, we can, lesson number two, we can go beyond what is expected. We are excellent at looking at something and going, yep, finish that. Nah, I've got that under control. Nailed it. No problems here. Let's move along. Move along. Nothing to see, people. But we won't go into each individual section here, but Jesus is saying that there's always room for more. So you have murder, he says. Don't murder. But Jesus says, do not get angry. He takes it to something to go beyond. Adultery, do not even lust. Do not even have that in your heart. Divorce, do things orderly. Vows, don't even make an oath. Eyes and teeth, turn the other cheek. Hate your enemies, love and pray for them. What a world this would be if people would follow these six basic ideas. So much would be different and so much could be fixed. The irony of what this world is trying to accomplish today with peace, love, equality, and so on and so forth is that Jesus already came and he already gave the blueprint for it. So why doesn't the world adhere to these? Something I've pondered. Basically, these ideas require work. They require effort and commitment on our part. They do not come naturally, as I said earlier. They must be developed. They are churchy. The only thing people want to develop these days is our resistance to these ideas. Christians must be willing to go beyond and look what it says in verse 20. Matthew 5:20. For I say to you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. The Pharisees and the scribes and everyday people are not striving for these things. They are just striving to get ahead in life. They are striving to succeed, and some of them are just trying to get through their day. So we should be the salt and the light and the ones that are striving to go beyond what is normal or expected, because we are the ones that will go beyond this current place into eternal glory with God. So that's lesson number two. Go beyond this world. So let's find a third lesson from this section, the lesson on the mount. And this is an old version of my script, but we're going to figure it out. Lesson number three. If you're not building on the rock, you're in the sand. He says there will be storms. Let's see where that was. That is, all right, there we go. Sorry, we'll go back. Look at chapter, I believe it's 7. Chapter 7 and in verse 24. We're going to read that. Yeah, passed right over. Oh, you got the lesson before you read it. Chapter 7, verse 24. Therefore, everyone who hears my words, these words of mine, and acts on them, may be compared to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and slammed against that house, and yet it did not fall, for it had been founded on the rock. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and slammed against the house, and it fell, and great was its fall. What a way to end a sermon. Jesus had gone over so many things that we didn't even cover tonight, about how to make an amazing life here on earth and how to enter the kingdom of heaven. And now he ends with a dilemma, or a call to action, if you will, from the marketing world. If lesson number three, if you're not building on the rock, then you're in the sand. He says that there will be storms, and he doesn't just say rain. He says floods and winds. There will be times of trouble ahead. And are you ready to live, and are you ready and living the correct way now? He says he's been telling us how this works throughout the whole sermon, and he wants us to see the warning signs. So if you're looking for a life of trouble, the sand is a place for you. You can dig quite a hole in the sand if you want. The sand is easy. It's building on the rock that takes work, but will give you a lasting foundation. Don't take the wide path, take the narrow path. You need to build on the rock so that you will have spiritual stability. Your foundations must be able to hold on when the wind blows. So if we look at, I'll just read though, James chapter 1, verse 2. James, he got it. He said, prove yourself doers of the word and not merely hearers who delude themselves. And then Paul also got it. He understood it. He said in 1 Corinthians 3:10, verse 11, according to the grace of God which was given to me, like a wise master builder, I laid a foundation and another is building on it. But each man must be careful how he builds on it. For no man can lay a foundation other than the one which is laid, which is Christ, Jesus Christ. So, James had it, Paul had it. Do you have it? Do you have the foundation that you can build your life on? Can you act on the words of Jesus and lay the foundation in your life? Do you already have a strong foundation? Do you need to make it stronger? Do you need to make repairs to that foundation? Well, the fields are white for harvest. If your foundation needs repair, we're here to help you with that. Please come forward as we stand and as we sing.